Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
This is our attempt to appease you, Mr. Miller. And the reason that we are working to appease you is because you set the bar, and the bar was not only reached but exceeded. 1,067 votes are in. We needed 1,000.
What's the number?
87% say yes, Gord Miller should ride his bike to work tomorrow. That's a 1-hour-and-15-minute one-way trip, obviously a 2.5-hour round trip.
Mm-hmm.
So, throw on that helmet.
Yeah, throw some water.
As I did the day that I destroyed my back and throw on the entire outfit.
No.
And cycle your way into work.
There you go.
It's happening. Yeah. Oh, by the way, mm-hmm. Fridays here on Overdrive is Skip the Dishes Day.
Yeah, so I get the whole, I'm taking the whole order.
But I'm thinking
you guys get nothing.
What we should do.
I'm such an idiot here.
What we should do instead, Gord, considering that you're already on your bicycle.
No.
Is that we create a profile, a one-day profile for you, where you are a Skip the Dishes delivery guy. We'll punch in our order. You can pick it up on your bike on the way to work. And you can just bring us the food. And you can have your share.
You know what Jeff O'Neill would do right now?
I am getting daggers.
You know what Jeff O'Neill would do right now? He'd walk out. he would get up. He'd baby monkey. He'd get up and he'd walk out.
That's it. I'm out.
Did I say Rafalski?
So, B.B. King, man. Nobody loves him but my mother.
And that's
and she might be jiving too.
That's
how I'm feeling right now.
That is shrewd.
That's how I'm feeling right now. Ain't nobody loves me but my mother, and she might be jiving too. I got to run this by the family and make sure it's okay, because we might have plans tomorrow night. But if we don't, I will say this. I will ride my bike in the next week, and I will try to do it tomorrow night.
Okay. All right, that's fair. I mean, if there are legitimate plans, we will grant you a reprieve. But I'm not co-hosting with you next week. Hazy's back.
Yeah,
he'll have to hold you to account. We'll make sure that he is informed of this verbal contract.
I'm going
to try
to
sign.
I will do my level best to do it tomorrow.
All right, Marley Rivera of ESPN, ESPN Deportes, a part of the Wednesday night baseball broadcasts on ESPN, is with us on Overdrive. A little later than usual, Marley. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I've had, 2 days with no baseball, so I'm very confused as to what's going on. But but back in the grind tomorrow, obviously, headed to Milwaukee to see Manny Machado in his Dodger uniform.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess you could have felt comfortable buying a plane ticket to Milwaukee earlier this week anyway, because he was likely either going to Los Angeles or Milwaukee. I know the Phillies were in there as well. At least that's what was reported. How big, and the context for this, Marley, of course, is that Corey Seager, their great young shortstop, is down for the year with Tommy John surgery on his elbow. This is a more than adequate rental. So before we get into the near term, let's get into the long term. Is there any chance that the Dodgers may try to retain Manny beyond this season and punt Justin Turner off of third base? Or am I crazy?
I have to say that we have to be, careful with that. The one thing is, and I'm trying to just really, really put perspective into it. Are you saying, Scott, that Manny Machado would not play short?
Well, Corey Seager will be back next year, right?
So then that's the difference, because Manny Machado has been, that's what I thought you said. Manny
Machado
is very, very vocal.
Why would he care once he's got 10 years and 300 schmil?
Because it is important for players to do exactly what it is they believe they can still contribute in. And I think that Manny Machado has been quite unhappy when he was at third base and he feels at home in the position that he always really wanted to play and where he considers, you know, for his own ego that he can excel. And I do think that in the open market, there are going to be a lot of opportunities at shortstop. So I do believe that the Dodgers have that, you know, have that chance to extend him. I really don't see Manny Machado accepting a position at third base. I really, that's just my feeling about it. It doesn't mean that I have inside information that he won't. And like you said, if he has some sort of incredibly rich contract, but I don't know. Sometimes I believe that players, these things for their ego really matter, and I believe in the case for Manny Machado, it does.
Okay, so Machado's off the market now. The teams that were in the hunt, Marley, the Yankees to a lesser extent, but we know Milwaukee was in there. We know Philadelphia was in there. Where do they turn now?
Well, for the Yankees, it was more like doing due diligence, right? The Yankees really didn't need a Manny Machado. We know what Didi Gregorius has been given. It was more, our joke around when I was talking to other Yankee writers would be like, well, if they want to give him away. You know, that's kind of the point of view that Brian Cashman had. So at least for Brian Cashman, it really is a non-issue, at least for the New York Yankees. The New York Yankees have plenty of problems in their starting rotation and need to continue looking for starting pitching. In terms of the one that you guys mentioned, that I really don't know what they're going to do is the Milwaukee Brewers. By definition, Manny Machado would have solved not all their problems, but would have really been just such a huge help in the offensive categories, which is the thing where they were shining, but at times lacking, especially due because of the fact that they have so many injuries. So that's the team that I look around and I go, where do they find someone who could possibly be anywhere close to Manny Machado? And I really don't see it. And I do think that this was the biggest hit was definitely to the Milwaukee Brewers.
So Marley, how many starting pitchers, in your opinion, do you think Milwaukee needs? Do you think it's more than one? Because here, I'll throw one at you.
Please, yes.
Jay Happ and Marco Estrada.
But does Milwaukee have enough to give to the Toronto Blue Jays, though, Scott? That's the one thing. Like, I just don't say. I think that would be a wonderful opportunity for the Milwaukee Brewers. I just don't think they can get it.
But they're both rentals.
If it's a matter, you know, I just don't know. I think that with the Seattle Mariners in place also looking for pitching, with the New York Yankees in place looking for pitching among many other teams, I just don't know that they're going to be able to put out a package that could get both of them down in Milwaukee. But definitely, I mean, you are right about the fact that they don't only need one pitcher to be a contending team.
Well, Jay Happ's not the only left-handed pitcher out there, and you know, there's been some talk about Cole Hamels in Texas.
Yes.
Which player is more attractive to you, Hamels or Happ?
I think that I would go in the beginning, and I know that Jay Happ has had the last couple of weeks, especially his last two or three outings, haven't been great. But I would stick with Jay Happ, and it's because of his knowledge, especially the New York Yankees, I need that extra arm, of how well he's performed throughout the years in the AL East. So I do know that there's a lot of Yankee fans out there that are always saying like, oh no, look how he got killed because he had given up, as we know, like the equivalent of a couple of grand slams in the last couple of weeks. But definitely because of his knowledge of the AL East and the great results he's actually had with an ERA under 4 within that division and just, you know, and this division in the AL East. So I feel like he's still the better chance, at least for someone like the New York Yankees. I think that he should still be the one that the Yankees should pursue. Now, in terms of Cole Hamels, a lot of people think he's the better, right? The better pitcher. And talk about, you know, the Texas Rangers who really needed to decide whether they're going to do a complete fire sale and see what they're going to do with this team and break it apart or just go for complete rebuild and reconstruct. So it's going to be interesting with Cole Hamels being a better pitcher what the Texas Rangers could get. But I do think that the Yankees should stick on Jay Happ's tail, if we're to say it that way.
With Marley Rivera of ESPN Wednesday Night Baseball, ESPN Deportes, it's Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. It's Overdrive. You're listening to TSN 1050. So circling quickly back to Machado, does his acquisition by the Dodgers change the landscape in the NL such, Marley, that we would be comfortable saying that it's highly likely we are going to get a third consecutive National League Championship Series featuring the Dodgers and the Cubs?
I actually have to say, Scott, that from the beginning, I believe the Dodgers were going to be there. Adding a bat like Machado's definitely gives them a better chance, though we know there's no guarantees, especially from a player for the very first time in his career changing leagues, right? Going from the American League to the National League where the pitching is entirely different, even though, you know, there's a lot of interleague being played right now, so there's a lot more knowledge, you know, from each side. But we don't know what kind of performance Manny Machado is going to have, and we know that. But I think that the Dodgers were always going to be there, Scott. I don't know that there's been anyone who can pose a true threat in the West. I mean, at times we think that the Arizona Diamondbacks can really take that final leap and take it away from the Dodgers, but the Arizona Diamondbacks are having the same problems that the Dodgers are, especially between injuries and also just their starting rotation just really not getting it done, and also the relievers at times not getting it done, which is such an important part of that club and its success in the last couple of years. So I don't know that it changed my mind, to go to a very long-winded answer. I believe that it was always like that. I think the Chicago Cubs need to worry of being there, but I don't think the Los Angeles Dodgers do.
Well, are the Cubs likely to make a move?
Well, they have to. I mean, the Cubs, and it's funny because I went in, and I'm not going to name names, but when the Cubs were at the Dodgers, I walked in and I looked around, and their relievers, I couldn't recognize half of the people in that clubhouse. And that was just really impressive. And that has been just such an Achilles heel for the Cubs. And that was such a strength of theirs, especially in the last couple of seasons when they made it to that NLCS that they've now split between Dodgers and Cubs. So if they don't get help with relieving, if they don't get some solid pitchers in relief, Scott, I don't think that the Cubs have a chance to get past the Nationals, actually, to just get up there.
Well,
if it's the Nationals, if it is the Braves, whoever it's going to be, just middle relief has been so terrible for the Cubs. I just don't see it.
Yeah, and Brandon Morrow just went on the DL today with biceps inflammation or something.
He was such an important player. He's been an important part of that bullpen and eating up innings, and now they just keep getting hurt. And that's something. I know that they have the pitching. I know that they have the offense, but that's really going to hurt you if you get no help in middle relief.
Okay, so two things related to a team that I honestly, based on reputation, would not have thought you and I would talk about it all this year, because typically irrelevant. Number one, do you think the Oakland A's will jump over the Seattle Mariners? There's a three-game spread. The A's went into the break hot. The Mariners were struggling badly. We know Cano is still suspended. Do the Oakland A's jump over the Seattle Mariners at some point in the second half and take that second wild card spot? And more in the immediate, do they do some acquiring of any kind between now and July 31st?
I think that it's going to depend. To answer the second question first, it's going to depend on how these next couple of weeks precisely that you mentioned go. There is a chance that they could just still make a run for that wild card, which obviously they're showing that they can. I do believe that there could be some minor acquisitions that don't cost too much to the Oakland Athletics and to Billy Bean. Like, if it's something very simple that they can actually add to this team and still continue to make it the contender that it looks like it is, then I do think that that can happen. But it's not going to happen right away. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, before the trade deadline. They're just going to ride this wave because they've also been very lucky, Scott. So I don't think that what the Athletics are accomplishing is sustainable. So my answer of them surpassing the Mariners in the end is no, with a caveat. If the Mariners, right, if Paxton is just a minor injury, if at one point they can get some more help from the pitchers that have been down, then I still stick with the Mariners. Because at this point, the Oakland Athletics have used 12 starting pitchers. They have just a terrible ERA. It doesn't matter because their offense has been so sick and it has just really carried them through this process. But really, without the pitching, you just can't have that kind of instability, which is really what the Mariners need to go for if they're going to break the longest drought in baseball. But just the Oakland A's with 12 pitchers, they don't really can't keep that starting rotation together. I don't think this is sustainable.
Now, meantime, at the top of the American League, you have Boston and New York. They've got a ton of games against each other in September.
Oh, yeah.
Which team's better? Who do you like?
Well, they're just very different teams. But if I have to say overall, I would have to pick the Boston Red Sox. And I think the reason why the Boston Red Sox at one point are superior to the Yankees overall is that, for me, they have different ways of manufacturing runs. Like, the way that they can score is not only with the long ball, right? We know that the long ball is there. We know what JD can do. We know what Mookie can do at times. But they also have a lot of speed on the bases. And the stuff that they can do with a healthy, I mean, it's going to hurt them not having Christian Vasquez on the team. Not that Christian was having just a banner year, but, you know, just a young catcher with a lot of energy for that team. But the way they can score on the bases in different ways that doesn't completely depend on the long ball, that's kind of why I'm just tilting a little bit to the Boston Red Sox. And, of course, because of the – I mean, not the Red Sox have a great starting rotation by any means, you know, any stretch of the imagination, but the Yankees, I just think I have a lot more stability and just a little bit more trouble.
With Marley Rivera of ESPN's Wednesday Night Baseball, ESPN Deportes, this is Overdrive on TSN 1050. So, Marley, I mean, you're Puerto Rican, you're a minority.
Yes,
you're
I am.
You're a female, and Josh Hader's tweets that were exposed during the All-Star game. First of all, from a personal perspective, how does that make someone like you feel?
I think it's unfortunate and it's sad because I at this point, we do believe, you know, if you see little children, hate is thought, right? Hate, racism, these kind of thoughts have to be taught. Kids don't feel that. And it just makes me feel sad that he grew up in the environment where he believed that this was allowed and where he believed that that was a commonplace to behave that way. But at the same time, it makes me question the motives of the person who started putting that online. I'm not justifying what Josh Hader did. But the fact that it happens exactly, you know, while he's on the mound at an All-Star game and all this stuff, exactly at the point, basically, after Gene Segura gets that three-run shot of him. So you just kind of question the motives behind this whole thing of them surfacing right now. And I'm not going to give the whole, you know, I do think that at 17, 18 years old, you should know better. You're not a child. You should really just know better. So in the end, I just feel sad that he grew up in that environment. It really is unfortunate that that's what he was taught since he was a child.
Do you believe it's enough that Major League Baseball has required him to undergo sensitivity training and it stops there in terms of punishment?
The problem is that it's such a difficult position for Major League Baseball to go in because Josh Hader is an employee of Major League Baseball now. He was not an employee of Major League Baseball 7 years ago when he was 17 years old. So I think it's a very difficult position for Major League Baseball to be in to give him some sort of physical suspension, right? Like a 5-game or a 10-game streak. And so in the end, I do think that Major League Baseball is trying to do the right thing with the sensitivity training. This actually is a big deal. This is something that happened to Yunel Escobar when he had some offensive messages towards homosexuals and this kind of stuff. So you feel for this guy that this happened to him, but I do understand why people want to see some sort of more concrete punishment to hit his wallet, which is where mostly where players, you know, get hit and it really hurts. So, but I just don't know that Major League Baseball has the latitude to suspend someone for something they did. Well, they were teenagers and they were not employees of Major League Baseball. So, I mean, I don't think there's much they can do, Scott. I believe that this is the most they can do at this point.
So, Marley, I mean, you'd like to think that things have improved from, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, when there were more openly racist attitudes expressed.
Yes.
Is it better?
I just don't know that it's changed. Yeah, so you're right. I don't know that it's
sad,
better.
That's sad.
I think there are times, there are times and places where they're hidden. So I don't know that the sentiments have been just, you know, at least in my personal experience as a person of color, I don't know that anything has increased or decreased towards the year. It's just that sometimes it's more veiled and sometimes it's more open. And I do think in the last couple of months and maybe, you know, coming back to the election, a lot of people believe that it's become more open, these kind of comments. But I just don't know that that we can legislate and punish someone for something that they did when they were 17 years old. I'm not saying that it's right. I just don't know that they can punish him right now in his place of employment. I think it's a very difficult position for them to be in. It's just, I mean, I'm not justifying in any way any sort of, you know, racial undertones or undertones in any comments. But in the end, it's just a very, very hard offense to punish at this point for Major League Baseball.
All right, so we always do this when you're on. What is the itinerary for the next week? How many cities?
Milwaukee tomorrow. Going to be in Milwaukee tomorrow for seeing Manny Machado and his Dodger Blue. And then on Saturday, I am going to be a speaker. It's the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. So I have a speech in Miami. I don't know why people pay me to do these things. And after that, it's a little Yankees Tampa Bay Rays.
So. I'm going to say there's no direct from Milwaukee to Miami, is there?
Oh, please. I want to get like a, you going to send me a jet? I can definitely travel from Milwaukee to Miami. That'll be fun.
There you go, Marley. Always great to catch up. We'll talk next week.
Thank you. So fun to have to be on with you guys. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, Marley.
Marley Rivera of ESPN, ESPN Deportes. I can tell you this. There should be a direct flight Milwaukee to Miami in the winter.
Yes.
Because I would think some Wisconsinites are looking to get out of the winter.
It's a sad commentary, though, when she said that it's probably not any different. It's just hidden.
Which, I mean, I don't know what Josh Hader believes now. I honestly don't. He says he doesn't hold the views that the tweets from 7 years ago suggest that he did then. And guess we take him at his word. But if that doesn't get out, and he is somebody who holds those views, that would be an example of what you just said and what Marley suggested, which is it's hidden. Absolutely.
And, you know,
it's a tough melting pot.
It's 60 years ago that almost 60 years ago that John F. Kennedy asked the question, who among us would be content to exchange places with a person of color? It's 60 years ago, nearly.
Yeah.
And I just, I find that things are being said now, online mostly, but even in public, that I don't think people would have said 10 years ago. I don't know why.
Worse. You mean worse?
Worse, yeah.
Well, 10 years ago, Twitter was a thing, but it wasn't a major thing.
I think the anonymity of social media has led to a discourse and a conversation that is in a lot of respects, ugly.
Well, and there's a lot of... I was reading an article last week. This one was specifically about Facebook, Gordon. I can imagine that it would apply in other areas. But data shows that some of these social media have a way, subconsciously even, of making somebody angrier, of embittering somebody, or of feeding them information, or of planting seeds subconsciously that makes people angrier.
Right. So what you get instead of I disagree with you, you get your takes are garbage.
Yes, exactly.
You're an idiot.
You know, my favorite is hot, and this is innocuous compared to the race yeah. And orientation and all of that stuff that gets said. Hot take. Is hot take a stupid take? It can be if it's stupid, but hot take is also used by people who disagree with your opinion. And I take exception to the term hot take, if I have thought something out and have expressed it clearly, it's not a hot take just because you disagree with it.
Right.
If I walk in to this studio today, open up the microphone and say the Baltimore Orioles are the best team in Major League Baseball, here's why, that's a hot take. Because I obviously haven't researched or given any thought to anything.
Right. But statistically, I can argue with that. If you want to say Tiger Woods is the best long putter in golf history, or if I want to say that...
That's an opinion.
It's an opinion. You can come back and say, no, it's Ben Crenshaw, or it's old Tom Morris, or whoever. You know, Gene Sarazen, whoever you want to say. You can have an opinion. You can't come on the air and make the argument that Baltimore is the best team in the American League when they have the worst record.
Right.
So I can refute that with a...
Now, that might be a poor example, but you know what, I know what I'm getting at.
I know what you mean. And so what's amazing to me, and I travel a lot, and I love politics. I'm interested in politics. I'm interested in current events. Is that it's very hard to have a conversation about current events now without it getting heated. Without it turning into, you're a so-and-so, you're this, or you're that, or, you know, you're in the tank for this guy, you're in the tank for that guy. And it's unfortunate. And I think one of the reasons that, you know, we've talked about this before, my Twitter mentions are blocked for the most part, is that I find that level of discourse ugly.
Well, it's not just ugly. It's also intellectually stifling. And if you have functioning brain cells, you don't want to be a part of it.
So you can't have an exchange of views. It just turns into you're an idiot. No, you're an idiot.
My dad can beat up your dad.
Yeah, and it turns into people getting into circular arguments with you looped into them. You know, like I opened my mentions yesterday morning because I put out a thing about, you know, how no Toronto players in 77 with the Leafs, the Raptors or the Jays has spent at least 10 years in the league and played them all for Toronto, you know, without playing for another team. And some of the responses were just like, why do you hate Toronto? It wasn't an anti-Toronto tweet. It was just, it's a fact.
It's a fact.
It's a statistical fact. I didn't say Toronto's a garbage city and no one wants to live here. I don't think that. It's just a statistical fact. It's an anomaly. I mean, obviously the Leafs, the Raptors, and the Jays don't get together and say, you know, we got to keep our players or get rid of our players. They work independently. It's just a thing that's happened. And it's intriguing to me that more than, you know, I mean, most cities would have a guy that is, there's something like 75 NHL players right now, or since 77, including active players, who have played at least 10 years in the NHL and have all played them all for one team.
Right.
But for some reason, it turns into a you hate Toronto.
Well, it's weird. Like, you get accused.
Now, who are you dealing with? Who's saying that? Who is Angry Ernie? I mean, is he 13? Is he 43? Who is he? Is he a he?
Is he a 43 going on 13?
Right.
Emotionally. And you don't know what people are going through.
But unfortunately, that becomes just part of the narrative.
But, you know, for me, I get accused all the time. You're a Toronto homer. And I'm like, well, and I have written back on a couple occasions. I said, you do realize that I'm a Toronto, I pronounced the second T. I'm a Toronto sports talk radio host.
Right.
I get we live in a world now where you can stream us in Edmonton, you can stream us in Beijing, you can stream us in Nairobi. But I am talking to a Toronto audience.
And your advertisers are in Toronto.
And our advertisers are in Toronto. Now, I have remained consistent. I mean, I objectively reported on the Toronto Blue Jays for a lot of years. It's different for me with the Maple Leafs. I don't hide it. I don't lie about it. It is authentic. I'm a Leafs fan. I've been a Leafs fan since 1985.
Right.
I'm a Chicago Cubs baseball fan. One of the things that this job has not destroyed in me, although I know it's destroyed it in others, is fandom. Mm-hmm. I'm a San Francisco 49ers football fan. So I don't walk around, do I like the Toronto Raptors? Of course I do. But am I a diehard, dyed-in-the-wool member of that niche, you know, just live every second of every quarter from game 1 to 82 crowd? I am not. So I don't come on the air and pretend to be in the very same way that I'll go on and on and on about the Leafs, because I do live and die every minute of every game with the Maple Leafs. So, but I get called a Toronto homer. I'm like, well, yeah, except when I worked in Ottawa and I covered the Senators, I knew who my audience was. So I wasn't going to go and wave a Leafs flag while I'm hosting the Senators pre- and post-game shows on Team 1200, because my audience has no time for that.
Right. And if you're hosting a show in Calgary today and you're talking about the Kawhi Leonard trade, you're driving listeners away. They don't care. That's because you're in Calgary. That's the deal. The funny thing for me is, so I do both, right? I broadcast regional games, I do Leaf games and Ottawa games regionally, and I do national games for TSN involving Hockey Canada, and I do national games in the US for NBC. So NBC's sort of theory is, if you get 500 complaints from one side about being biased and 500 from the other side about being biased, you've probably cut it down the middle.
You've done a good job.
Because
you've pissed both sides off.
Well, because they're fans, right? They don't. If they hear one bad thing about their team, you're against us.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Joe Buck, I think, in his Twitter profile, Twitter profile, no, I don't hate your favorite team.
No, I don't. And to be honest, he doesn't care.
Exactly. Overdrive, we care about this, is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Back into the Kawhi Leonard acquisition. The lead NBA writer for NBC Sports, Kurt Heelan, will join us. It's Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050. All right, so we know, because we're living it, the reaction here in Toronto to the Kawhi Leonard acquisition. We spoke to Jabari Young down in San Antonio in the first hour of the program and got San Antonio's reaction. What is the national reaction to the Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan blockbuster? For that, we turn to our friend Kurt Heelan, who is the lead NBA writer for NBC Sports, and he joins us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Kurt, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. So I'll throw that question out there. What is your sense? What is the sense of the people whose opinions matter around the league about this deal?
I think we can debate how much people's opinions matter, but I think this was seen as a really good gamble by Toronto. They had yes, LeBron had switched conferences, but there was a sense that they kind of hit a wall, right? I mean, that yeah, there was 59 wins and the number one seed, but they weren't they weren't getting deeper enough into the playoffs. They weren't doing, they just weren't making the impact everybody was hoping for from this roster. And frankly, I thought we'd see more of in the playoffs last year from this roster. And this is a, look, it is certainly a big gamble, but either you make the finals this year and Kawhi is convinced that this is a place he wants to be and he falls in love with Toronto and he stays, or you start the rebuild, and neither of those are terrible options. I mean, I wrote about this, and I think a lot of people did nationally. I see it as a win for Toronto. I think this was a really smart move. They didn't give up OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam or some of the great young players on that, or quality young players on that roster. So you've got a real shot to make a dent this year and then see where it goes.
So, Kurt, I think there's a feeling in Toronto, an emotional feeling about DeMar DeRozan, who was drafted by the Raptors, had been here 9 years, was a guy who really embraced the city of Toronto. Outside of Toronto, is there talk about the fact that he wasn't, for better parts of the last 5 years, a very good playoff player?
There's a little of that. I think the bigger fallout for Toronto on that is simply other players taking notice. That's a concern, is that other players are like, man, he was loyal to them, they weren't loyal to him. Right. And that's going, I mean, now, honestly, loyalty in the NBA is a really relative thing in pretty much everybody's case, but it does get noticed. If you take care of players, teams notice, and I think there was that got noticed, but I think there also was this wasn't a good enough playoff roster, this was a good playoff team, and frankly, I kind of feel that way about, I love Jabari, you had on last hour, he's a great guy, and I don't know what he said, but I kind of feel that way about this Spurs team, which is, I kind of like them in the regular season as currently constructed. I don't think they're very good in the playoffs. I think they're really beatable. Of course, like, the West is a gauntlet right now, but I kind of think DeMar is a little bit that way in general. And this, if Kawhi is 100% healthy, and that's obviously the big question kind of hanging over this, if he is back to 2 years ago MVP level form, this becomes as good a team as there is in the East.
Kurt, I couldn't tell you what I had for breakfast, so if I'm shady on the details of this attempted at a memory, fill in the blanks for me. But it was not this past playoff, obviously, but the previous playoffs, where Kawhi got hurt in game one of the Spurs-Warriors. What was that? Was that the second round or third West final?
Conference finals? I think it was the conference finals.
Okay. Yeah. And San Antonio had jumped up to out to a major league in that first game, and then Kawhi got hurt, Golden State stormed back, and quite obviously the rest is history. Just trying to judge the impact of Kawhi coming to Toronto, what does that series look like if Kawhi stays healthy?
I still think the Warriors ultimately win. I think that they are the deeper, better team in that series. But instead of being quick and a relatively quick execution, that goes 6 or 7. He is that kind of player, and he's important against. And you guys have a bunch of, Toronto has a bunch of these guys now. If you're going to go against the Warriors or Boston, frankly, you better have switchable defenders. And you've got that with Siakam and Anunoby and other guys on that roster, and certainly Kawhi is that way. You've got to have versatile defenders, because they throw a lot of things at you, and guys who can score in a variety of ways. And that's what he brings, is on top of the fact that he can get you buckets and, creating his own shot, creating for others, can hit the three, is good in transition. Defensively, he gives you a lot more opportunity and options. And that's, I mean, more and more, that's kind of a really big key going against these kind of more positionless teams.
Kurt, how much of a factor is Drake with players?
There are players who really love hanging out with Drake, and I think it helps. But I don't know how much. First off, I don't begin to know what Kawhi's musical tastes are. Beyond that, I don't know how much that ultimately influences a decision for a team, a player. It's cool to have him part of that conversation and maybe talking to him, but I think it's part of an overall picture where you've got to have Masai Ujiri selling them. He's got to find he's got to fall in love with the city of Toronto and the experience there. And by the way, I would not rule that out. Toronto is a favorite spot. So it's funny. A lot of rookies kind of are like, I don't know about Toronto. It sounds cold. And by the time guys are in the league, like 4 or 5 years, they're all like, man, Toronto is like my favorite stop. Like, or one of their favorite stops. They love L.A. They love Miami. They love New York. But Toronto is right up there with places they love to go. And I think for a more mature player, it really works. I think the challenge with Kawhi isn't just Kawhi, though. It's the people in his ear.
Well, the funny thing, Kurt, just specific to the Toronto stuff, and I remember talking to a couple of American players who were traded and acquired by the Blue Jays a number of years ago, and they talked about, I was worried about the color of your money and figuring that out, and how do I exchange my American money for Canadian money? One guy told me he was up in his condo. It was an April day, so he was new in the city, and he's got the Weather Channel on, and it says that it's 16 degrees outside. So he bundles up, jumps down the elevator, steps out front, and everybody's wandering around in a T-shirt. And he said, so I had to go back up and change into something, you know, with a few less layers. And I said, well, you know, 16 is 16 Celsius, which is 60 Fahrenheit, 60 Fahrenheit. And he looked at me, he said, well, where I grew up, 16 degrees is 16 degrees. You know, 16 Fahrenheit, sub-freezing. And so I do think, like, players know, don't they, that Toronto is no colder than Boston or Philadelphia or New York, and it's warmer than Milwaukee and Minneapolis and some other stops in the middle of winter. They have to know this, don't they? Or do they not?
I think players learn that the longer they're in the league, the more they travel up there, the more they get to experience it. It's kind of funny because, ironically, if you talk to Greg Popovich, like, off the record about his... And if you want to talk to Greg Popovich off the record, bring up wine or food. If you get him talking about his favorite food cities, Toronto comes up really fast, really fast. It's one of his favorite stops on the tour. And I think, again, for veteran players that start to come up, Kawhi isn't the most engaged player in the community and in just with other players. He's just that kind of really quiet personality is kind of who he is. And I think that that's part of what he's not going to become somebody who he's not, but you've got to get him out of his shell a little bit to come out and experience Toronto and look, the tremendous fan support and the size of the fan support, which I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of younger players, a lot of people in America, frankly, period, don't realize how huge it is. All that, he can be won over. It's not going to be easy. He does want to go home. I've heard mixed things about which team he wants to go home to, but he wants to go back to L.A. But that can be changed in the same way Paul George's mind was changed. Paul George was just a little more open to it. It's going to take a lot more work with Kawhi.
That's the weirdest thing about this, Kurt, is we don't know what he thinks really about anything, do we? We don't know what happened last year. We hear yesterday he didn't want to go to Toronto. Today he might be warm to it. We don't hear from him.
No. And then, you know, it's funny, just to tell a little story. The year he won Finals MVP, he would go in, they wouldn't put him on the podium on off days. You know, there's, for people who don't know, on the off days, the team still meets with the media on a practice day. And what they do is they have their practice, and then the biggest stars, so you know, if it's the Warriors, it's the coach plus Curry and Durant, go to a big podium in an interview room. Everybody else stands at a separate podium kind of set up around the court. And they talk, and Kawhi would get this big crowd at the start. And by 10 minutes into this 25-minute or whatever it is interview period, there's nobody around him because you can't get a quote out of him. It's kind of useless. It's not interesting. And the only interesting – I mean, I talked to him for 5 minutes thinking – or not 5 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes thinking, man, I can get something here because he's by himself. And the only interesting quote that I ended up tweeting out was like, who has better tacos, where you played college in San Diego or – we grew up in San Diego or, you know, San Antonio. Outside of discussing tacos, like, he thought about that and had an answer. Outside of that, there's nothing. Like, it's just really hard to break him out of that shell. And that's just going to be part of the challenge of getting him to love Toronto.
Kurt, thanks so much for your time. Let's talk again soon.
I'd love to do it, man. Take care.
Kurt Helin is the lead NBA writer for NBC Sports. He joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Hurry in to Maple Toyota during the Toyota 2018 factory event where you can get rates from 0%. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. We've got ProLine Best Bets. We've got the recap of the Should Gord Miller Ride His Bike to Work Tomorrow poll? I think the answer is yes. It's Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, Overdrive, TSN 1050. And now for today's best bets, brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Cubs.
Only one game tonight.
Oh, I... okay. Just wait. I'm okay. On the Cubs at home over the Cardinals. No, let me correct that. I'm on the Cardinals as the visitor. I changed it late.
Oh, never do that. Never do that.
But I wrote it down differently.
Never do that. Never change it. I'm just telling you.
I'm on the Cardinals because they just fired their manager. Big series against the Cubs. They're going to open it up. So I'm on the Cards as the visitor. I'm on the Tiger Cats as the home plus to win by at least 8 over Saskatchewan. And I'm on the Ruffies and the Tiger Cats to go over 51.5 points. $20 pays you $102 even. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game.
Great ticket, take the Cubs.
I hope you're right, as a fanboy. But Carlos Martinez, Kyle Hendricks, they just fired Matheny. They won their final game before the break, having just fired their manager, who was not a popular figure. So I don't think the Cardinals are good enough to make a run in the Central. Cubs and Brewers will negotiate that, but I do see them winning tonight.
Okay.
I'm setting myself up for disappointment by having my least favorite team beat my favorite team.
So my hope is that, now pending my family's approval, that I will ride my bike to and from work tomorrow. I'm told via text message from a friend of mine that it's actually longer than an hour and 15 minutes.
1,351 votes, 87% say yes, Gord Miller should ride his bike to work tomorrow.
Okay, so I'll probably leave at 2 to get here for, 3:30-ish.
Lots of hills. Lots and lots and lots of hills.
Lots of hills across the way. I got to try to plan a route where I go across bridges.
Be uphill both ways, Gord. It'll be one of those old stories.
I used to walk 8 miles of school uphill both ways.
You and I are back at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and if I can steal a turn of phrase, we'll chat then.